Okay.
All right. It's Teacher Talk on Kill Radio. This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Dave and Nick, or Nick and Dave. Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Is your microphone on?
Seems like. No, it's not. Wait. That one is.
All right.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, last week was interesting being by myself, but thanks for calling in.
Good job, by the way.
Thanks. So, we're ready for another edition of Teacher Talk, and as always, we're going to start off with our successes from this week. Did you have a successful week?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, but we're talking just about our teaching roles.
Mm-hmm. Now, everyone probably knows we had spring break this past week, which meant we weren't at school, but the success I have to talk about is stuff that I was trying to get done for school. So, as always, there were things I didn't get done, but what I want to focus on is success. So, my first success was I finished an online class that I've been signed up for a long time and had been putting it off for a while.
Yeah.
Finally finished it. It was just a matter of sitting there and getting it done. Had to watch videos, read stuff online, do a little bit of research, and respond to post my own responses. I mean, it's pretty easy. It's just a matter of just a little bit time consuming and a matter of getting it done.
Mm-hmm. Is there any benefit, like actual intrinsic anything in it?
Yeah. Well, the class itself, I'm doing it for salary points. And if anyone doesn't know, salary points are what you have to earn in order to move up on the salary scale. And I've been on the second to the last step of the salary scale for a number of years now, because I just got, after taking a whole bunch of classes, I kind of got lazy, and or I did get lazy, stopped taking them. I got burned out. So anyway, this past summer, I took a lot of classes to get myself to the end of the salary scale, because you have to get to the top of the salary scale in 10 years in order to get any raises after that. Mm-hmm. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm at 10 years.
Uh-huh.
But nowhere near the top of the salary scale. I mean, I messed up apparently.
Oh.
I got to take that course. I got to take all the online courses I can.
Okay, but you have some time to get them done, or are you already?
No, I'm already at 10 years. So I'm losing money, is what the thing is.
Okay, yeah. I'm at 9 years, so I know that I have to get. I just have 2 salary points left, and I took 2 salary point classes over there. I took my last 2 salary point classes over the summer. I took like 13 salary point classes over the summer. Unfortunately, some of them had homework. And the homework was due October 31st. And as the school year started and everything, I kept saying, oh, I'm going to get my homework done. I never did. So I still have 2 points left. So this class is one of those points. But in addition to the need to get the salary points done, the class itself is interesting. It's about the use of force. and kind of goes, it's a pretty simple topic. It doesn't seem like it would have a whole lot of aspects, but part of it was searching for your schools, your districts, and your state's policy on the use of force. And I couldn't find anything at the school level. Or
so use of force means the teacher using force?
Against students, right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things the class talks about is that in generations past, it was pretty acceptable for teachers to use force and not considered any big deal for, you know, an AP or, you know, a principal or even a teacher to grab a student's elbow and drag them down the hallway and shove them into the office, mm-hmm. you know. And now, basically, anything you do that restricts a student's movement is considered a use of force. I mean, if a student is, if you want a student to remain seated and the student wants to get up and you put your hand on the student's shoulder and tell them, no, you need to stay seated. And no matter how gently you do that, it's considered a use of force because you're preventing the student from doing what the, you know, you're preventing the student from having freedom of movement.
Right. And you know, any other touch of a student could be molestation.
Well, yeah, that's you know, that's true too. I mean, this class didn't go into that. It was specifically about use of force. Yeah. But yeah, it's true. I mean, it really is
no touching,
exactly. And so, and it's, and I was sort of thinking it's kind of a no-brainer, although it wasn't when I first started teaching. I think back, and when I first started teaching, you know, I did use force without really thinking about it. I remember one time in particular, we were at a school dance in the gym, mm-hmm. and this kid was, like, running and probably pushing others or something. There was something wrong with what the kid was doing, and I actually took the kid's hand and led him to the door of the gym, or took his wrist and led him to the door of the gym. And I didn't use like the kind of force that would cause pain or bruising or anything like that. But that I know I would never do that now because I just know more now. Mm-hmm. I'm more aware now, but back then I was new. And but the weird thing is, I've actually since taking this class, I've actually seen force being used by adults.
Really?
At the school. Yeah.
And it sounds so bad when you say it.
I know. And the teachers who were using different kinds of force probably felt quite justified in what they were doing. But one of the principles of the class is that the one upon whom the force is used is the one who gets to decide whether force was used or not.
Right. And if you have, you know, a lot of it depends on the disposition of the parents too. I was at a school last year where a parent was, you know, her daughter was all over the floor and running around and, mm-hmm. and hitting people and everything. And at the end of the class, she started to go out of the classroom after I'd asked her to stay, and I
right.
put my finger in the loop of her backpack.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Right.
And I got written up for it because my administrator was looking for things too at that time.
Right.
And the parent was like, you know, she said I did it 3 times and it wasn't really true, but now it's on my permanent record.
Yeah. And yet grabbing students' backpacks is a fairly common practice. I mean, maybe not as much now as it was a few years ago, but it's still done, you mm-hmm. know, and it is technically a
use of force.
Meanwhile, there are other parents who will say, who actually want you to use force on their kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If they could, they would have you do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because they don't want their kids.
Let's talk about your other success.
My other success was that I had to finish this book study for our school. We have an assignment at school. We have to do a book study. Well, you know all about it. We have to study 2 books, and there's a collaborative part and an individual part. And the collaborative part I already finished before spring break, and one day this week I finished the individual part. So that was a success. Took several hours to just, I had fallen behind on it. I was supposed to, every time we had a meeting collaboratively, I was supposed to do my individual response. Well, I stopped doing that weeks ago. And so finally I caught up on it over the spring break. And then my other success was I got some exercise this week. I'm so bad at getting exercise. I mean, I used to be in such good shape a long time ago, but now I'm just trying to make myself walk twice a day, and which seems so doesn't seem like very much exercise, even as I'm doing it, it feels like nothing. But I was on the phone with my mom during one of my walks, and I was telling her that, you know, I shouldn't discount it, because by discounting it I end up not doing it, and it's better to just be out there walking than do nothing. So I need to
absolutely. How long was the walk?
My first walk was only about 20 minutes, and the second one was about an hour.
Wow.
First one was in the morning, the second one was in the evening.
And you did this three times?
No, twice. Oh,
or twice the what? Whole trip, the whole break?
Oh no, this was just about every day.
Wow, that's great.
I didn't always have hour-long walks every day, but I had two walks every day.
So my success, I know you're about to ask.
Yes, was, I was just going to ask you, what was your success?
Reading the same
next?
Book you're reading.
Yes.
Which is really a great way of having professional development.
I agree.
Instead of putting us in a room with somebody in a suit, you know, from Hawaii, they're having us.
Which has been happening.
Yeah, we've been having somebody come from Hawaii to give us training and how to
somebody else coming from Davis.
Yeah. Which, you know, we could be giving our own trainings just as easily.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know why they still do that. So I've been reading the book, too, that you've had to read.
Yes.
And I had a late start. But we have a couple minutes.
Through no fault of your own.
Right. Well, yeah, they gave me the wrong book to start with.
Right.
But it's Madeline Hunter's Mastery Teaching.
Yes.
And Madeline Hunter is like the, I don't know, she's like the Shakespeare of, you know, educational administration.
Right.
Or something.
Right. Or she was a professor at UCLA.
Aristotle.
There you
go. Yeah, better than Shakespeare.
Yeah. She was a professor of education at UCLA and administrator at the UCLA, used to be the UCLA Lab School.
And you know, so there's a lot in it, and I feel like you could learn a lot. And so I got up to chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah. Out of 17.
Yeah.
So you're like 2/3 of the way through.
I'm just not totally sure that this is actually what makes better teachers. I think it might make better administrators. I don't know.
You know,
why.
I've been thinking about that too. If you put everything into practice that Madeline Hunter says, or even some of it into practice, I think it would make for better teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you have to, I think that there's sort of emotional obstacles when you try to do certain things, you're dealing with live students, which makes it hard.
Yeah, well, one thing is they keep telling you how to teach.
Right.
And they never tell you, in my experience, they never tell you what to teach or how to teach what you teach.
Okay.
Like a little bit. She'll give examples. Uh-huh. Like this is what you do with a topic sentence.
Right, right.
Like for example, but the whole book is about how to, you know, use motivation and how to use questioning and how to use all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But they don't. No, I don't feel I've maybe had one class in teachers training school on how to teach, you know, a paragraph.
Right.
They don't tell you how to teach your actual subject. They teach you how to teach in the abstract over and over again. Like, and anyway, that's one of my pet peeves. I'm just a complainer. This is the success section. I should be talking about the success. I'm actually excited about, you know, my new knowledge of the six questions and the seven steps and the three principles and the.
Yeah. I think the way to be successful with that book is to choose one thing from there to focus on and make that a goal and just like work on that one strategy or that one principle until you feel like, yeah, I've got it, and then move on to the next one.
Well, I'll try that. So do you want to segue into the next segment that we have here?
Yeah. So maybe even next week we could talk about, like, you know, one thing that we chose, because I'll have to, I finished reading the book and I, but like one thing I'm going to apply this week, for example, is creating an anticipatory set,
mm-hmm.
Which will be like sort of survey, not questions for kids to find out what they know, but questions to find out what they, or to get them thinking about the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to create an anticipatory set for this coming week. And maybe what I'll do is to, in order to feel successful in that book, is just that anticipatory set and then be able to report back on how it goes.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll pick something too. I'll do that too.
Okay. Cool. Well, those were our successes. When we come back, we're going to talk about our challenges that we had.
Good.
So this is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave.
Trouble so hard, ooh, Lord, trouble so hard. Don't nobody know my trouble but God. Don't nobody know my trouble but God.
This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, sorry. I think I have myself up a little too high here. Turn myself down a little bit. So we finished talking about our successes this past week. And this past week was spring break for us, but we still, of course, both had objectives we tried to accomplish this week related to our jobs, teaching. Mm-hmm. And my success was finishing some work I had to get done and getting some exercise. My challenge was, one, getting to school, because even though there was no school, the school was open and the custodians were going to be there. And I have two contacts among the custodians that I was going to call them and they were going to let me in to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wanted to go to school was because if you walked into my classroom, it looks pretty organized, but the area around my desk is very disorganized. It's just overloaded with all kinds of stuff. And even areas that look like there's a pile there, like an organized-looking pile, it's really not. And anyway, there's stuff I want to organize.
It's a pile that looks organized?
Yeah, it's a pile that looks organized, like it's a symmetrical-looking pile. It's not an overflowing type. Yeah. But I have several of those. And then I wanted to make some booklets for the students. One would be a writing response booklet, and the other one was a sort of a test prep booklet. And some copies. And then I have some public library books that I forgot to pick up and drop off at the public library. And I often will bring in a lot of public library books, based on things that the kids are interested in, so I can, you know, expand what they have, give them more choices for reading. And on my way out the door before spring break, I forgot to grab I had put them all in a bag, and I forgot to grab the bag, and I knew that the due date was going to be during spring break. Anyway, Monday I woke up late, and by late I mean 8:50. And I really should have gone anyway, but you know, sometimes when you wake up late and you think, oh, great, it's late and the day's over already. Because I thought, you know, it's 8:50. By the time I get ready and get down there, it'll be like 10:30 or something, yada, yada, yada. And I just didn't go. Tuesday, I determined to get up early, purposely turned down an invitation to meet up with a friend of mine Monday night at 11 o'clock for a drink, and I said, no, I can't go out because I have to get up super early and go to school, Well, I did get up super early. I did go down to the school. And I looked through the gate, and I saw some electricians working. Their trucks were there and stuff like that. But the gate, the school was all locked up.
So is this the second time that you tried to get to school?
Yes.
To do your books and
Yeah, my organizing and whatever else. You know, I often try to get stuff done while the kids are there, and it never works. I can't really focus on anything while the kids are there.
And you don't want to stay after school?
Well, no, I do stay after school. I do stay after school, and then, but even with staying after school, there's always stuff that still gets put off, you know. Mm-hmm. And then in the past, we used to have Saturday school at school, and so I would frequently go in on Saturdays because I would be able to catch up on, you know, it's amazing how many little tasks there are. And so on Saturdays, I would sort of catch up on things, organize, you know, do stuff like that. And it would help me feel ready for Monday. So this spring break, when I found out that the school was going to be actually open, sort of, that the custodians would be there, I thought, oh, this is a good opportunity.
Okay, so this is the second time now that you're trying, and this or the third time?
We're on Tuesday, so it's the second time.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it into like a story here. Like, okay, so the first time I went and...
Oh, yeah. So the first time is when I woke up late. And actually, the first time when I woke up late and decided not to go, I should have gone anyway, but that was the day that I had my success and I got my other two things done. So at least I made that into a productive day. Tuesday, I went down there. The front door was locked. I drove around. The back gate was locked. I could see the electricians in there. I called my two contacts. And nobody answered. So I waited around for a while, hoping that I would get a call back or I would see a door open or something like that.
No luck.
Never happened, so I went home. Wednesday and Thursday were both out because I had other plans those days. And then Friday, so I planned to go on Friday. Friday when I woke up, it was early, but I realized, you know what? It's Good Friday. And I'll bet they're not there. And I didn't want to call anybody and be sort of like, hey, are you guys, I don't know, I just suddenly felt like it's Good Friday and it's technically, I think.
So you didn't do it Friday
either. So I didn't go Friday either. And then
it was such a noble plan.
I know. And then I know. And then all I can do is think about what I'm on Monday morning, what I'm going into. I'm going to go straight to my desk and the kids, this is always, you know, school, our school starts so early.
7:15.
7:14 we have to sign in and 7:20 is the late bell for the kids. And so I'm usually half awake when I get there trying to get stuff together. The bell's always ringing too early for me. Have to get the kids and then...
You have to go get the kids?
We, in sixth grade, we have to go pick up the kids and bring them upstairs ourselves. Yeah. So that's a pain. And then... my other challenge was just doing anything productive because my two successes, the two things I accomplished were on Monday. So I had two more things that I wanted to get done this week. I had a lot of things I wanted to get done, but there were two other big things I wanted to get done. And I looked at both of them, but through the whole rest of the week, I never accomplished any of it. And now my challenge for the rest of today is to actually put my lesson plans together for this week. So anyway, yeah, I feel like sometimes I feel like deep inside of me, there is just a really lazy child who doesn't want to do anything. And then last night on the radio, I heard, I was listening to, late night radio and I heard someone make this really great metaphor. It was a mouse and the elephant. Mm-hmm. And imagine an elephant and a mouse are going on a walk together and the mouse is sitting on top of the elephant and the mouse wants to go one way and the elephant wants to go the other way. Mm-hmm. Obviously the elephant is going to go the way it wants to go. Like the elephant is going to go the way it wants to go.
Right.
And the metaphor was for your conscious mind and your subconscious mind.
Right.
And the mouse is your conscious mind. And
that's such a good one.
I know. So, consciously, you have all the stuff you want to do. Your subconscious doesn't want to do it.
So I guess the question is, you know, how do you change from being the mouse into one of those, like, elephant trainers?
Yeah.
that can make it like stand up on the hind legs right. and everything and all that.
Right, exactly.
Or do you want that? Maybe you'd just rather just be an elephant without the mouse. Have an elephant life.
Right. Right.
Maybe I'm getting too far off topic.
Do you need to train the elephant to follow the will of the mouse, or do you need to just train the mouse to let go and, you know, let life flow, you know, the way the elephant is doing?
Probably the problem is that you don't live in a natural elephant habitat.
Right. The mouse is aware of all of the sort of external goals and all the needs of survival and, you know, making money
in society.
Society. The mouse lives in society. Right. That's right.
It's a weird analogy or metaphor because, you know, why would the mouse? The mouse is just like the elephant. You know, you might as well be a flea on the mouse.
Well, that's so funny you said that because actually I changed it to mouse. The guy on the radio actually said flea. The conscious mind is a flea.
Oh,
and the subconscious mind is an elephant.
Oh.
Yeah. But then I changed it to a mouse because...
I knew it was a flea.
Yeah, apparently you did.
Because it jumps around a lot and...
That's true. You know what?
It's really, it's like a parasite. It's parasitical.
It's a parasite. That's true. Yeah. I didn't really relate to the flea. I related more to a mouse. But actually, the flea jumps around and the flea is a parasite. Yeah. So, yeah. But then if I just let my subconscious mind just do whatever it wants, where am I going to live, you know? Right. I mean...
Africa.
Right.
Or India.
But the subconscious mind...
Depending on what kind of elephant your subconscious mind is.
But what I'm saying is if I just allow my subconscious mind to just do... But then there are some people say, do what you love and the money will follow, you know? So that maybe if you...
You'd have to be like an artist.
Yeah, if that was what my subconscious, you know, mind, what my true passion was. I think the mouse kind of like... There's so much that the elephant sees that the mouse doesn't see.
Mm-hmm.
The mouse thinks that... The mouse is kind of like in the executive position and thinks that it sees and knows everything, but... And it's even more so when you think of a flea, its perspective is so small and limited, and yet it's trying so hard to run the show. And actually, you know, perhaps...
And the elephant knows what's happening miles away.
Right. The elephant can see and hear and sense from miles around. That's true. And the flea can't. So, yeah, maybe I need to just...
Well, I think, yeah, if we could bring our classrooms and our work environment more in touch with what the elephant... Mm-hmm. would feel comfortable with, it would be better for all of us.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad we came to a conclusion.
And what challenges did you have this week?
Grading and lesson planning.
Oh, yeah.
Were my challenges this week.
Mm-hmm.
I did like an hour of grading
mm-hmm.
in the whole week.
Yeah. I
left it for today.
Yeah, I'll be doing that later today, too. I sometimes amaze myself when I think back on how much grading I used to do. It's just
Well, you used to be better, according to you.
Oh, yeah. I used to be so dedicated. I would do so much grading on a daily basis. The kids would do so much work, and I had so many more kids. I used to have 30 more kids than I have today, but the same number of classes, two classes. And I would have 72 kids, 36 in each class.
Wow.
Now I have 20 and 22, so I have 42 kids, 30 less. And I give them so much less work.
You have
and I grade so 42 much less.
Kids in the whole day that you see?
Yeah, 42 kids the whole day.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that even work? I guess they have so many more elementary teachers.
Well, I have two classes. I have two groups of kids.
This is why they're getting hit harder by the cuts.
Right. That's why that's right. That's why we're getting... you know, reduced more because, yeah, we're serving less kids.
Fewer.
Thank you, Mr. English teacher.
It's like a license to correct.
Yes, I teach English. So, yeah.
Do you want
to... Back when I had 72 kids, though, I used to do so much more grading. I gave the kids more work, and I would grade all of it. And I would really do it carefully, too. And I would go back the next day and go over what I had you know, what I had corrected and everything
else.
But
you didn't get sleep, according to what you told me.
Well, I didn't do a lot of stuff. I didn't exercise. I didn't have a social life. I didn't sleep. I probably didn't even eat properly. I mean, I know I didn't eat properly. And yeah, it was my whole existence. Yep.
Well, that's what it is. That's what you need to do to be Teacher of the Year.
Yeah, it is. Yep. But is it really worth it?
Is that what? It's not what the elephant would do.
Actually, at that time, the elephant was.
That's what the elephant wanted.
Yeah, it was. I remember someone saying, how, this more experienced teacher that I was friends with saying, how can you grade everything? I learned a long time ago not to grade everything. And I said, I actually enjoy grading everything.
You need to work it out, work some stuff out.
Yeah.
That way, maybe.
Right.
Well, so it's not, is that not sustainable, do you think? I mean, like, could you do that over the course of a whole career as a teacher?
I don't think so. On the other hand, there are teachers who do maybe not that particular thing, but I mean, I think you could certainly be more dedicated than I am today, as long as you had balance in your life, which I didn't have at that time. I think what was unsustainable was that I didn't have any balance. You know, I didn't have friends, for example, and stuff like that.
Well, when you watch like movies about great teachers, well, I'm only thinking of one, Freedom Writers, you know, like she does all this great stuff, but her marriage falls apart.
Her marriage fell apart. Exactly. But that's what it had to be done to realize the success that she had.
And then she stopped teaching.
That's true.
After that.
Right.
And now she's a college professor and.
Oh, she is?
Yeah. At Cal State. Like Long Beach, I think.
Oh, interesting. Well, those are some of our challenges for this week, grading, lesson planning, and so on, and doing anything productive. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the issue of bullying. So stay tuned. This is Kill Radio and Teacher Talk with Nick and Dave.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. See, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way.
This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave.
Hi.
We just got through talking about some of our challenges for this week. And this week was spring break, but we still had challenges just getting some productive work done. And now we're moving on to issues in education. This week we're going to talk about bullying because we went to see the movie Bully. And what did you think of the movie, Nick?
It was great.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I was telling my mom about it, that she should watch it. It's opening April 13th and nationwide, but it opened in New York and L.A. a couple weeks ago. And at first it was going to be a rated R movie. And even as we were watching it, I thought, I don't understand why it's rated R, except the F word was used a few times. Well,
yeah, I mean, you said that, like you said, I agree with what you said, that they should have just bleeped it out if that's going to keep kids from seeing this movie.
Right. So anyway, that's what they ended up doing.
So it doesn't have an R
right
anymore?
So it's going to be, when it opens nationwide April 13th, it'll be PG-13. And they managed to edit out the few uses of the F word.
Well, that was an obvious choice to make.
And the other thing was, as I recall, the F word only came up kind of in the beginning of the movie anyway. So it wouldn't have taken away from the movie for you not to see and hear the word being used.
It's the ratings are kind of funny. Like you would, God forbid that a 13-year-old should learn the F word.
Right. Right, which they already know and use, you know, all the time.
And it's like an example of how, probably, of how stupid the people who use the word are. I mean, it's not glorifying the...
It's
like,
not glorifying the, it. That's a good point. I mean, it's actually... It's part of the aggression, and so it shows... That might be why they had it in the first place, is because it demonstrates the aggression that the, you know, that the bullies were using. So yeah. that could be. But I don't think that it would take away from it to not have it there, or to... Because you know it's there, but if it just gets bleeped out, you know what they're saying, yeah. Well, a couple things about bullying. I mean... I was already thinking about bullying because I've been sort of witnessing some bullying going on at the school. Usually it's happening when I'm sort of walking by at lunchtime. And so the difference between what I see at school when I'm just walking by and what the camera saw in the movie was that the camera is fixed and watching what's going on, whereas I'm in motion. So I can see that there's some rough play going on. And probably if I stood still and watched it for a while, I would see actual bullying very similar to what was going on in the movie. But I know that there are... I'm just going to share a few things I know about bullying. There's four types of... Or, you know, there's several types of bullying. I have four listed here. Physical is what we all think of right away. But there's also verbal bullying, which includes teasing, name-calling, and threats and stuff like that. There's sexual harassment. And then there's emotional bullying. And emotional bullying includes things like spreading rumors or ostracizing somebody. You might say nothing to them, but you're still bullying them by making everybody not like them. And I also know that there are several roles that come into play in bullying. There's the perpetrator, and then there are the supporters. Who egg the perpetrator on and laugh whenever
they're also known as bystanders.
Right. And then there's the victim, which this movie was about the victims. And then there are the bystanders. Now,
I thought that was the supporters.
Well,
bystanders.
The supporters are sort of actively supporting the bully.
Right.
The bystanders are passively supporting the bully because usually the bystanders don't do anything. And so even though they may not be actively egging the bully on or laughing, just the very fact that they're not, you know, that they're standing by is helping empowering the bully.
Yeah.
And the other thing I know about bullying is that adults, anybody can be in any one of those roles, adults or kids, teachers, you know, students, the principal, even parents, you know, anyone could be a perpetrator, a supporter, a victim, or a bystander. And I mentioned this last week, but after watching this movie, I've really decided that I don't want to be a bystander. You know, I don't think I'm a bully. I mean, I have said things, you know, over time that were pretty rude, that I thought, oh, I shouldn't have said that or whatever. But I don't think that I don't believe that I am a bully. I'm really not a victim of bullying, and I'm not a supporter of bullying, but I can say that I'm guilty of being a bystander. I mean, if I walk by and I see that kids are playing rough, and I don't really take the time to notice if there's one kid who's actually being victimized in the situation, even though I'm only there for a few seconds, I think that by not stopping to see what's going on, I'm kind of a bystander.
Mm-hmm.
So, you
like
agree?
Yeah, like you're in a hurry to get.
Yeah, you, what you're saying is true. Like you're in a hurry to get somewhere. You don't pay attention. If a kid is right there getting bullied, you're going to be able to say, "Well, I didn't notice. I was in a hurry and I didn't pay attention," and no one will blame you for it. But the reality is, it happened around you, and you let it happen in a way. And of course, the bullies are good at only doing things when people aren't looking, when adults aren't looking, but they can see when adults really don't care too.
Right.
You know, so
it's such a big difference between when an adult is around.
Right. Yeah.
And isn't.
Now, I was going to talk about the movie, but I actually want to jump ahead and say something about our school, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You know, one of the dumbest policies at our school, which it's probably not even really a policy, it's just they haven't really thought ahead that they haven't really thought about it, and so they just do it. But, you know, suspensions are way down, and that means that kids don't get sent home for anything. But, and that was a stated goal, to reduce suspensions. But kids still get suspended from class, but they're still at school, they're just in the office. And then, so they don't have to go to class, they're in the office with other kids who have been suspended. But when it comes time for nutrition and lunch, they get released to nutrition and lunch. Mm-hmm. So here they are in all day suspension or whatever, and they're just sitting in the office. But when it's time for nutrition and lunch, they're out there causing trouble just like always. Mm-hmm. And it just makes no sense. Like, I think that one thing they should do is when kids are suspended, you know, especially if a kid is suspended for bullying or whatever, but I think one thing that they should change that would help would be if kids are in the office for a day-long suspension, somebody should take them over to the cafeteria before lunch and let them get their food and eat, or before nutrition, and mm-hmm. have them remove, you know, separate from the rest of the school population.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good idea.
Yeah, because it just kills me how they... Really, it's a free day for them. They don't have to go to class. Mm-hmm. They don't have to deal with the teacher. They don't have to do any work. And then they get to go hang out with their friends at nutrition and lunch and cause more trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back to the movie Bully. There were five kids, and the movie makers sort of followed the five kids through their different travails. And two of the kids we never got to meet because they had committed suicide before the movie started. So we got to hear from their parents and their families. Of course, it was very tragic. There were the two boys who had killed themselves. One was 17. One was only 11. And then there was a girl who was not physically assaulted or anything, but she was gay and she was totally ostracized in her Oklahoma community where she lived by the school at large. But one thing she had, I noticed, was she had friends and supporters.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to deal with the judgment of the community and the ostracization on a daily basis, but she had her network. She had her friends.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a girl who was bullied every day on the school bus. And one day she took her mother's gun on the bus and she pulled out the gun and she basically sort of went off on the kids on the bus.
Right.
With the gun. And then there was sort of what I saw as the main character of the movie. His name was Alex. He was 12. And what did you think of Alex?
Well, he reminded me of a kid in my school. He,
your school growing up or your
high school. Uh-huh.
Okay.
My high school. I had a kid named Peter in my school who had the same kind of smushed nose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his speech was kind of
mm-hmm.
a little different. Although he didn't seem to be, I don't know, was Alex, did he have mental challenges?
Well, Alex to me came across as other kids I have known who had like mild forms of cerebral palsy. And that was how he appeared in terms of the way he walked, the way his face looked and stuff like that. They said that he didn't have any like health issues. His main thing was that he was born at only 26 weeks. And so when he was born, he was severely premature. And so, and what I noticed about Alex was he was so articulate when he spoke to the camera that he seemed just like a normal, you know, aside from looking different. And by looking different, I mean, he was real skinny and with sort of a mouth that didn't close and sort of odd-shaped glasses that were lopsided on his face and stuff like that. Things that kids would make fun of. And but he was articulate when he spoke to the camera, which I'm assuming he was talking to an adult. But I noticed in the they would have him on the bus and with subtitles, and he would say the most... He would say things to other kids that just indicated he didn't know how to talk to people his own age at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, he sat on the bus all by himself until this much bigger, older kid sat down next to him. And he said to the kid, "Are you my buddy?"
Or he did say, no, he said, "You're my buddy.
You're my buddy, right?" Yeah. And who says that, you know?
He's just asking for
it. He's asking for it. And then the kid who...
said, "I will end you."
Right. He just started making all these horrible threats and saying all the things he was going to do to him. And then...
It was amazing to hear the kid threats, because I don't get to hear those.
Mm-hmm.
Like this other guy says, "I can crack your Adam's apple."
Oh, that's right. That's right. And then Alex went...
And it sounded so believable. Really?
I know. And then as Alex was... It sounded like he had done it before.
Right.
And as the kid was threatening him, Alex was going like this. Okay, like that. And it was just painful to watch. But I wanted to compare and contrast Alex and the girl who took the gun on the bus. Now, the girl, and specifically I wanted to compare their parents, their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
The girl who took the gun on the bus, her mother, and it was the mother's gun that she stole, her mother was so forgiving and so supportive. It was amazing. And so was the whole family. And the whole family saw, what I could tell was the family saw the what was happening to the girl, the teasing and bullying she was putting up with on a daily basis. They saw it as, they took it personally, like it affected all of them. Mm-hmm. And while the girl was in juvie, the mother was visiting her, and the mother had her arms around her. She was engulfed by her mother, and her mother was grooming her and was, you know, sort of like stroking her and all the stuff and saying, "You know what? You made a mistake. You did something really stupid. Something like, you're still my daughter. I still love you. I don't know." Something like that. Meanwhile, Alex, talking to his mother, he was standing there. His mother was trying to get him to admit that he's being bullied on the bus. And she was just glaring at him like he had done something so wrong. And you could tell mm-hmm. that he was just so ashamed. There was such separation. Or, I mean, there was such, like, he was not being supported at all.
Right.
He was being shamed. And then from both of his parents. And then his dad had said, "Well, if he doesn't tell us what's going on, then we can't do anything." And kind of like, he was really on his own. Mm-hmm. And then when they went to talk to the school administrator, and even after they saw the video that the filmmakers had made, and they went to talk to the administrator was just in complete denial that anything bad was going on.
Well, this is the administrator that was so bad. She was... like the whole audience, they were like hissing her by the end, right?
The theater audience.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, yeah, the people in the audience, you know, hated her, but she knew she was on camera, and she didn't like, I'm sure that she believed that everything she was saying was like the right thing to say.
But she was just, and then she was really like stupid.
Yeah. I mean, she just didn't.
There was that scene where the kid was, one kid was beating the other one, bullying the other one incessantly, and she made them handshake. And
right.
She said to the bully, the bully, she says, "Okay, guys, put out your hands and shake." And the bully puts his hand out to shake.
Right.
And the kid who's being bullied all the time didn't want to put up his hand.
Right.
And then she says, "Okay, you were good to the bully."
Right.
You can go to class. And then she says, "He was ready to make
right,
up.
Right, right.
You weren't.
Right.
You're the one with the problem.
Exactly. And yeah. then, yeah, he said, how do you think he felt when you didn't put your hand out? So if he made you feel bad by punching you, you know, but you're making him feel bad by not putting your hand out, aren't you just the same as him? Is kind of what she said.
I want to find her.
I know. And then he said, no, because I don't hurt people.
He was so articulate.
He said, no, we're not the same because I don't hurt people. And she said, I think that's when she said, well, don't you think you hurt his feelings when you didn't put his hand down, put your hand down? And then he said, he wasn't even, he bullied me before and you had told him to stay away from me and he's not staying away from me. You know, and she just sort of brushed that off. And another thing she said was that made me crazy was this kid. These two kids came up to her in the hall. And one kid was crying and holding the back of his head. And he said, and he was sobbing. And he said, this other kid, you know, pushed my head into a nail.
Right.
And the other kid who was there to help that one kid said, yeah, he got hit pretty good. And so she said, well, let me check it out. And she lifted up his hair and she's looking through his head. She said, I don't see a hole like that. Right. And so basically nothing was done, you know. And yeah, she
and then
was,
so they had these meetings with PTA and the community, the town, and all the parents were saying that the school's not doing anything and they haven't done anything.
Right.
But the school board didn't send anybody. The school board was, but when they did say anything, they were defensive.
So defensive. It was amazing. I mean, they're just trying. I think they were sort of emblematic of school boards everywhere. They were just simply trying to make it seem like they're doing the right thing and they haven't done anything wrong.
I think that's part of being a school board member is you and an administrator is you have to appear good.
Right.
You have to appear like
right.
Not just competent, but actually good.
Without and you can't get your hands dirty either in a way. Okay. I don't really know how to say it, but basically like you can't, you, if you get involved, you're going to, if you have to stay as not involved as possible and yet appear that you are, have taken care of everything. I think that's the political pressure that they yeah. will sort of.
And they all learn that sooner or later.
Yeah, right.
I guess, or most of them.
Yeah.
Except for the activist board members.
That's the part that was hard to watch, the adults.
Right.
And how they, you know, how they dealt, you know, with all this stuff. Now, the girl who was gay, I really admired her father because this was, like I said, a small Oklahoma town. And I loved it when the father said, and the girl, like I said, she had a lot of friends and she was dealing with the rejection and the judgment on a daily basis. And so was the whole family. The family had lifelong friends that didn't talk to them anymore because their daughter was gay. And the father said, having a gay child has made me reevaluate everything I believed up until now and reevaluate who I am as a human being. And I thought it was really, he was so accepting toward his daughter, and he had told her that they could move to a bigger city if she wanted to. And she started off saying, no, I want to stay here, and I want this place to change. Yeah. And by the end of the movie, she was saying, you know, maybe it is time to move on to a big city where I can be more accepted.
Well, she was the type of person to change people. I mean, because she was, you know, not only was she aware.
She was magnetic.
And she was, yeah, and she was cool looking, and she was,
right, right.
But she was also a basketball star.
Right.
And she was, you know, she was appreciating nature.
Right, yeah. And then that was one of the really sad parts, which she was walking through the gym and looking at the roster of the names on the gym wall, and saying my name should be up there.
Right.
But she had been so harassed on the basketball court that she quit basketball. Yeah. And anyway, so that was the adult that I admired, and that was the adult that I thought. But for the most part, though, seeing the adults in action was painful.
Yeah. So, you know, it makes it hopeful. This, I think, will get a lot of introspection going.
Yeah. Starting with me, and when I go back to school tomorrow, I don't want to be a bystander. Mm-hmm. And
tomorrow, oh my God,
it's tomorrow. And I don't know if I'm going to eat my lunch outside because it's during lunchtime when all this stuff is going on. Or I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I want to do something. I want to make sure this isn't happening all around me and I'm not ignoring it. You know, a kid was at our school, was kicked in the ribs or something and was laid out on the floor. This is 2 days before spring break. And the kids told me, I didn't see it with my own eyes, but the kids told me that the paramedics had to come. Mm-hmm. But I did see with my own eyes, I did see him laying on the floor, and I did see the nurse come out with a wheelchair to pick him up. Mm-hmm. So, it's happening. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, we got 4 minutes left to talk about news.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the news. So this is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave. This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave. Our next segment, last segment we talked about the issue of bullying and the movie Bully that we both went to see. Now we're going to talk about education in the news. This is real short. I noticed in the LA Times there is an editorial about our homework policy in LA Unified. And there was a new homework policy that was going to go into effect this year. And then they decided to not put it into effect until next year. And the policy was that homework could not count for more than 10% of a student's grade in a class. You know all about that, right?
Yes.
Well, our new superintendent, John Daisy, decided that that policy was lacking in some things that needed some overhaul. One of the problems was that 10% was, they decided wasn't enough because basically you could not do your homework at all and still get an A. You could still get 90%, you know, and they decided that wasn't, I guess, I thought 10% was okay, but whatever. But the other thing was there's no guidelines for how much homework should be given. Like you could make homework 10% of the grade, but still give 10 hours of homework, you know, per week. Only it's only worth 10% of the grade, for example. Uh-huh. And then the other thing was there's no distinction between routine homework and long-term assignments. So they're working on a new policy. There's a draft of it that's going to be voted on this month. And the new policy is that homework can count for up to 20% of a grade. And then there's a 10-minute rule for elementary school. The 10-minute rule is that there's 10 minutes per grade. So second graders should do 20 minutes of homework and third graders should do 30 minutes and so on.
Yeah.
Until you get to sixth grade, when sixth grade is 60 minutes of homework. And then after that, you can actually give more than 10 minutes per year. And then long-term assignments can extend the limit and count toward a higher percentage of the grade. So this 20% and the 10-minute rule apply to daily routine practice type homework. But if you have long-term projects and stuff, they can actually count for more of the grade and add to the time that kids, you know, do their homework. And then the other provision is that individual schools can deviate from the policy if the teachers and parents put together their own separate plan.
All right.
Pretty flexible.
Well, you know, the part of what it said in the other, in the article that you showed me about it, was that it was, the original plan was flexible in the wrong areas and inflexible in the wrong areas.
Right. The 10% was inflexible.
I mean, but look what they're doing. I mean, they're saying, you know, okay, 10 minutes per grade up to sixth grade, then you can do as much as you want, unless it's a long-term project. Then right. you can have as much as you want.
Right.
And it's like, just, you know, they're trying to micromanage, and they haven't even gotten their macro managing under, you know, right. done yet.
Good point. Yeah, it is a form of micromanagement. And then I wonder if this, I want to see like what studies have been done on homework.
Yeah. What's this based on?
Yeah. Now, what's your deal with homework?
Well, I am trying to simplify it. For now, we just have a reading log every day, 30 minutes, write down the setting, characters, pages, and have it signed by an adult. And then right now, that's all I'm doing. But I'm trying to get to the point where I have them keep a journal for an independent reading book.
Oh, yeah.
But I haven't got there yet. And so right now it's just a reading log. So basically not much.
I think I haven't got there yet is the theme of this year for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I started off the year with geography homework every day, which I thought was pretty successful. And actually, it's my fault that it started to get more complicated. I started trying to throw in too much stuff. But my goal for this year was for the kids to leave sixth grade with a map of the world imprinted in their minds, which I think is really important. Because one day I thought to myself, I think I was saying, I was talking about some part of the world and I was looking at the map and showing the kids all the stuff. And a kid said, "How do you know what that is?" And I said, and I thought to myself, how do I know what this is? And I realized I have a map of the world in my mind. Like, it's just there. And not with every detail, obviously, but enough that I can. And so.
So you can't zoom in.
I can navigate.
People's houses and things.
Right. No, I can't do that yet. But so the homework was pretty straightforward. I would give them a page to look at. Their history book has an atlas in the beginning. I would give them a page each day to look at, and I would just have them write 10 facts, any facts from that page. And it was just a daily practice to build their recognition of the world map. That was going really well. I don't know why I stopped doing that. Like I said, I was trying to throw in all these different concepts. And what I should have done was, yeah, teach them about the concepts in class. But still stick to the main goal of getting that world map imprinted in their mind. You know what? I think I'm going to go back to that. Then I started having them do vocabulary for homework, which I started to realize was just simply meaningless. They weren't really practicing. They were just copying. And then I was also having them do something else for homework. Copying this other stuff out of the history book. The last couple of weeks, I just haven't even done homework at all. Because their other teacher gives them homework, and I just, when I'm not dedicated to the homework myself, and when only like some kids turn it in anyway, I just think I reached a point where I just gave up, and then I start to wonder how important is it, you know. I think it does have its place, and I think I am going to go back to my original plan of that geography. So I think that was good. I did notice that kids were starting to be able to find things, you know, easier and start recognize some world capitals and stuff like that. And now I have several new kids that I didn't even have last time we did geography. So I think I'm going to go back to that.
Sounds good.
Now our next segment is about educational literature, and we're going to talk more about homework in that segment when we come back. This is Teacher Talk with Nick and Dave on Kill Radio. This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave. And we just got through talking about homework, and the LAUSD homework policy is changing. And we talked a little bit about our own homework policies. And now I want to share about Ron Clark, the author of The Essential 55. Nick, are you familiar with this book?
Yes, I am.
Ron Clark, The Essential 55, has 55 rules that he practices with his students.
Wait, is he still teaching?
I really couldn't tell you.
I would love to know that. And is he still, like, amazing teacher? Because it sounds like he might be one of these teachers that, you know, works at, like, a manic pace and then goes and does something else.
Right. Well, actually, I noticed that a lot of his rules are, like, a lot of the rationale behind what his rules is basically delegating stuff to the kids so he doesn't have to manage a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he makes less work for himself.
He makes less work for himself because for example, when they go on a field trip, he doesn't have to monitor a student's behavior because he enforces his rules. So he enforces all of his rules so diligently and teaches them so thoroughly, and he makes sure that the kids follow them so that when they're out on the field trip, all the rules are in play. For example, he was in one rule, one of the rules he talks about when he says the phrase, "Let me show you on the overhead," like there are kids whose job it is to do every little thing that needs to be done in order to set up the overhead, like closing the blinds and plugging in the overhead projector and stuff like that, so that all he has to do is walk from one spot to the other spot and the whole thing is already set up for him. So perhaps through we should look it up and find out if he's still teaching and stuff like that.
Well, I was thinking we could interview him on our show.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're ambitious. So, anyway, you know, his rules sound great and stuff, sort of, but there's so many things that I just, like, you know, for example, if you win, do not brag. If you lose, do not show anger. Well, that's good sportsmanship, and I can totally see, you know, that. But there are other rules like saying yes, sir. His students are required to call him sir.
Well, that's him.
And that's him. And I just can't even, you know, that's hard for me to even, you know, imagine. But anyway.
I bet the kids don't mind it.
They probably don't. I mean, they you know.
You can have him call and you can have him say, yes, commander.
There you go. Yes, a wise one.
His holiness.
Well, rules 16 and 19 are about homework. He has 55 rules and they're numbered. And rule 16 is homework will be turned in each day for each subject by every student with no exceptions. And so his policy is that students, if they don't bring their homework, they have detention the next day for an hour. And so, you know, right away I think, oh, great, you know, that's like, that would mean being stuck at school for an hour every single day. And then he gives them extra work, you know, not just they have to do their homework, but they have to do additional work. But then his motivation side is he keeps a homework tally banner, and the homework tally banner is outside of his room, and it says, every student in this class has completed his or her homework for blank days in a row. And every day that they bring their homework, he fills in the number. So it'll say 38 days in a row or 39 days in a row.
That's like the sign in companies where you like days without operator.
Yeah, without injuries.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then when they get up to 10 days in a row, he makes food for them and he brings it the next day. And he does it for every day that they all turn in their homework from then on. So then until someone doesn't bring their homework. And then, like, let's say that day, you know, in the book he says day 11 he brought cookies, day 12 he brought brownies and all this stuff. And then let's say on day 19 someone doesn't bring their homework.
So it's desserts mainly?
Yeah. Well, the only examples he talked about were desserts. And he gives it to them at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And then what was I going to say? Let's say on day 19 someone doesn't bring their homework. then they go back to day zero. And so then they have to wait 10 days of everyone bringing their homework. And then on day 10, he brings in, you know, he makes something that night for them. So he does this in order to, you know, like, motivate them, but also to acknowledge them for doing their homework. And anyway, the other rule, rule 19, when I assign homework, there is to be no moaning or complaining. This will result in a doubled assignment. So his whole philosophy, maybe I should have talked about this first. His whole philosophy is that it takes drastic, you know, he does things that seem drastic.
But I would imagine if you were doing this, it would just be like, it would be such a feeling of relief to have avoided one of these punishments.
There you go. He does things that are drastic because he wants to make sure that his rule is followed. But then once the rule is followed, the kids can clearly see how beneficial the rule is, yeah, and how much it actually helps their achievement and how much pride they can take in that. And so his point in being drastic is sort of like, his point in being drastic is to teach the kids, you know, basically to teach them that it's a teaching tool. And if I get the feeling that if he had to come in on a daily basis and, you know, sort of mete out the sort of punishments or whatever that he has, he wouldn't do that because it's not working. I mean, he does it to teach them, we are going to do it this way, and you're going to see how good it is, you know, and how much it benefits you.
I'm going to try that, but it's got to be something that they might actually accomplish.
Yeah.
And it's got to be something that, I mean, if I say everybody's got to turn in their homework no matter what it is, if it's putting your name on a piece of paper, that's going to be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, I mean, I'll just make it a totally easy homework or my reading log. You know, if everybody turns in my reading log, I'll bring you pizza, which would be $60 for me.
Well,
$100 or whatever.
Well, they have to do it 10 days in a row.
No.
Because, in a row.
Well, the thing is, this is a week-long assignment, so it can't be that. I guess it'll have to be something else.
Now, when I used to do reading logs, I would check them every day.
Oh.
And, yeah, it took some time. But I was able to do it kind of quickly. I would have the kids turn in their reading log. They were in composition books. And I would have them open their composition books and put it on the desk. And then the next composition book would go on top of that. They would all be open on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I didn't have to open them.
Well, these are little slips of paper.
Oh, okay, okay. Right. Well, anyway.
I have a question about CSTs. Should I save that for the end?
Yeah. In our last segment, when we talk about lesson plans, I was going to say something about getting ready for the CST. Do you want to hold off for just a second?
Yes.
All right. Now, the other thing about his, Ron Clark's, sorry, I'm trying to do two things at once.
I think the thing about Ron Clark, one thing is that, you know, I don't know if you can really, you might be inspired by a couple of things he does, like we're talking about, you know, uh-huh, an aspect of it, but I don't know if you could take somebody's whole program, because I think the way he arrived at this, it was such a personal, you know, it was an expression of all the things that worked for him.
Very true.
And he was able to get there by being so well organized that he was able to think, well, what else? I have, you know, time and mental energy to go further.
Right.
So what can I do? And so he did something. And for right, everybody, that will look different.
Very true. I mean, it's basically it's being in the driver's seat and saying, this is what I don't like. This is what I'm going to do to change it. And then following through on that. Yeah. Very true. So how would that look for you and how would that look for me? It wouldn't look the same as it is for Ron Clark.
With me, it would be, I think it would be a lot more like loosey-goosey kind of like creative things. Like they'd be going on field trips or I don't know.
He has rules for staying in hotels and eating at restaurants because that's what they do.
Oh.
They go on trips.
Well, I don't know. I don't have anything on Ron Clark, so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, in our final segment, we're going to talk about our lesson plans for the week and that'll be in just a minute when we come back. This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave.
Well, every person you can know and every place that you can go and anything that you can show, you know they're nouns. A noun's a special kind of word. It's any name you ever heard. I find it quite interesting. A noun's a person, place, or thing. Oh, I took a train to another state. The flora and the fauna that I saw were really great. Saw some bandits chasing the train. I was wishing I was back home again. I took a train to another state. Well, every person you can know, like a bandit or an engineer, and every place that you can go, like a state or a home, and anything that you can show, like animals and plants.
This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio with Nick and Dave. Well, we're in our last segment, which is lesson plans for the week. And the first thing I'm thinking of right away, school starts back up tomorrow. We have 23 school days left until the CST. You have 21. No, that's not true. You have 23 also. So I'm thinking about the CST. Now, I mentioned this before on the radio, but I have a friend who had a lot of success and saw his kids improve a lot by having them practice not with the sixth grade CST, but with the second grade, then the third, then fourth and fifth grade CSTs. And Nick tried that last week and you said it didn't go so well. What happened?
Well, you know, I think I managed to make them think that it was okay that they're taking the second grade CST because I explained it, but they did really badly on it.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them got like more than half wrong.
Right.
It was so, I want to call the cops. I want to call the Marines in.
now so how what was their test taking behavior?
I mean they seem to
did
be
they
taking
take it seriously?
The test. Yeah, they seem to.
Okay. Well, then maybe this is just like good information for yourself and for them to see what parts of the second grade CST they still don't know. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff they're supposed to be learning in second grade that they're in seventh grade and they don't really get it.
Yeah.
Was it across the board?
No, like I had a class that some of them did well, and you know, but my sheltered kids and the ones who had come from ESL, you know, they just really did abysmally.
And when I say, was it across the board, I mean like all the different standards that are tested?
Oh, you know, now that's another thing I'm wondering. Like I'm supposed to go and find out which questions a lot of them did badly on and then see what type of questions those are. And so that involves like, is there an easy way of charting that?
Well, I know. Well, yeah, there is. I don't know, easy, but the back of the release test question packet shows what standard each.
No, I know that, but that means like I have to go see. Okay, so 9 people missed number 13, 8 people missed number 2, you know, 12 people missed number 21. You have to actually go and count who got what wrong.
Right.
I don't know if I can picture doing that like many times.
Right.
I did it a couple times.
Uh huh.
And so now I've got the questions that a lot of people got wrong.
Okay.
And it was kind of different from one class to the next.
Okay, right. Interesting. So, yeah. You know,
I guess maybe one thing would be to increase the motivation somehow.
Well, I was going to say, but if they don't know the information, if they don't know the answer,
I think it's got to be difference. Partly them not reading the questions really carefully and not paying attention.
When we go back to school, are you going to go over the assessment?
Yeah.
Well, so maybe as you show them, as you read, you know, the second grade one is maybe a test case. And as you read the questions out loud in class, perhaps they will see they'll see more of what the right answers were. you know, as they read the question a second time. And
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, usually I do the CSTs on Tuesdays and Thursdays, okay. So, or just Tuesdays now. But so I'll go over the questions a lot of them got wrong first, uh-huh. And then give them another test.
The third grade one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do the second grade one this week. I'm going to do half of it on Wednesday and the other half on Thursday and go over it on Friday. And we'll see how it goes. And then, you know, there are definitely people who say that we shouldn't teach to the test and shouldn't spend so much time preparing for the test. I mean, I think it is instructive to practice.
But this is how I'll be judged, too. And I
absolutely.
I mean, when I get a little more confident, mm-hmm. then I won't care.
Right.
But at this point, I would kind of like to have not have something that says I did really badly.
I know what you mean. Yeah. And
and I realize that's not selfless of me, but it is my elephant talking.
You know, sadly, this preparing for the CST actually gives me something to do at this point in the school year. Now, if I did not prepare for the CST, you know, I would focus more on the writing and the ancient civilizations. But then I pick up that stuff more once the CST is over. I don't know. I don't know how effective it is to prepare for the CST. I think that this way might be more effective than what I did last year. Last year I did sort of a game show format, and they actually walked through all the sixth grade release test questions. I don't know how much they learned.
Well, I was thinking the main benefit of doing these things is to just get used to taking tests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that when they finally are there with the real test, they're like, I know what I'm...
Yeah, they're rehearsing the test-taking behavior, which is important, you know. Because, yeah, well, on the day of the test, they have to sit there for 145 minutes and just do nothing but take a test. You know, the other thing that my friend who had all that success, another principle that he put into practice, was that he emphasized to the kids not to rush and not to care if the bell rings and they're not finished. The school actually has it set up so that if kids are not finished by the time the testing session is over, that they can actually eat their nutrition and then go back and finish the test. I've never had a kid do that. Like, they always finish because they want to eat. And my friend that I was telling you about, he starts at this time, you know, weeks ahead of time, he starts telling them that on that day, the most important thing is to take your time. And he has, like, a lot of his class not done by nutrition, and then eat and then come back and finish later.
So I would think the kids would want to do that. Like, they would want to not go to class. They would rather eat and come back and take the test if they knew that was what was happening.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I'm going to try to stress that this time because...
It's like a vacation, kids. If you...
Right.
Take your time.
And then, you know, you only get one shot every year to take this test. And so, but still, the kids feel the pressure when they see that clock going and they're hungry. Well, this other teacher that you and I work with, a sixth grade teacher, he brings food and he stops like halfway through the testing time and they have a snack right there.
Whoa. You so know, he's the proctoring class. The test for his own students? Is that what happens?
We all do that. We all proctor the test for our own students.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not in, well, maybe in elementary. I mean, I can't proctor the test for all my students.
No. You're only testing one class.
Yeah.
So he brings snack for that class so that they don't feel pressured by the nutrition bell.
But I'm not going to, I'm only going to proctor one. I have 130 or more kids. So, I mean,
well, yeah, I know. You would only do this with the class that you're testing.
Right.
If you chose to do it, you know, you might not even choose.
No, I might do that, but doesn't help the other kids.
Yeah. But, oh, I see what you're saying. Well, let's say that everyone in your PLE did something similar.
Yeah.
Then all of your kids would be benefited by it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it would be a discussion to have with that group. Right. You know. I'll tell you the teacher's name so you can talk to him about it if you want to. He takes like breaks and stuff like that. He makes sure that the kids don't get burned out, because they do get burned out. I mean, imagine the reading portion, especially for two solid days, 145 minutes each day, they have to read passage after passage after passage. It's pretty tough. And so it makes it even tougher when they're trying to rush through it, and then they just start. But then I've had kids who, like, let's say at 120 minutes, they've only answered 10 questions. And then by 145 minutes, they're done. They've answered 41 questions.
Yeah.
And so, like, they basically didn't answer those last questions. They just bubbled, you know. So, anyway.
And then you want to use force. But you can't.
Which brings us back to the use of force. That's right. Well, we had a very stimulating conversation today. We talked about our successes and what we were able to get done this week. His challenges, what we weren't able to get done, and the issue of bullying, which I'm personally making a personal pledge to try to do something about at our school. I don't know what that'll look like yet. And then our school district's homework policy, as well as Ron Clark's homework policy, the author of The Essential 55, and our own homework policy, which is in a state of flux. And we talked about our lesson plans for this coming week. Oh, something else I forgot to mention. Besides CST, I'm trying to finish this 5-paragraph essay we've been working on for this other assessment and let my kids continue their writing on the laptop, which is pretty successful. They definitely love using the laptop for their writing. And then once again, try to get into India, which is what I'm supposed to be teaching them about next in ancient civilizations. But like I said, I'm going to create an anticipatory set to get them excited about the unit.
Very good.
So, anything else you want to add?
Well, I was going to do CSTs. I was going to show them rubrics for the reading logs. I was going to try to do the periodic assessments, which we haven't even talked about.
And your periodic assessment is about recurring themes, right?
Yes.
Mine's about the credibility of characters.
Ooh. That's deep.
It's pretty deep, yeah.
Do they even have, like, characters that aren't credible? But not just narrators, but, like, all characters?
The main characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. characters are usually credible, but... Yeah. Their job is to critique the character's credibility.
Wow.
Yeah. It's cool. Pretty deep for sixth grade. But
they can do it.
Yeah, they can do it.
So yeah, like for Madeline Hunter, I want to sort of tighten up on what's my objective? What am I which is like something an actor would ask. What am I trying to teach
convey
in this particular moment?
Yeah.
And then to find out if I did teach it, and then if I didn't, then to reteach it.
Right.
The scientific method of Madeline Hunter.
All right. Well, I hope we'll have a lot of success to talk about next week. And this has been Teacher Talk with Nick and Dave on Kill Radio.
Yay.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found my needs, a lonely place to be, and so I learned to depend.
This is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio. I actually had this problem